Proceeds to the apocalypse right here. Crime and Bank Radio, the truth about markets, Max and Stacy. Yeah, you know, I've been talking about price precedes news and the truth about markets, and economics is really the thing people need to focus on, not the politics so much, but the economics. Now, Stacy, what's going on? There's rioting somewhere based on this notion?
Yes, there are riots in Budapest. Rioters have stormed the state television station because there was a leaked recording from last May in which the prime minister of the country admitted that his government had lied morning, evening, and night about the economy in order to win the last elections in April. Right. And it seemed to confirm the worst accusations leveled at him by the opposition during the campaign. They right. said at the time that Hungary's state budget was on the verge of collapse. And he said, oh, no, look at our statistics. Our own government statistics are saying everything is wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
But now tens of thousands of Hungarians are rioting.
Well, they've joined the global insurrection against corporate occupation.
I'm just picturing like the lies in America about the state of the American economy.
Morning, noon, and night. Lies, 24 hours a day.
Yeah, they're much bigger. And they have the media is so complicit in it. All these Bloomberg and James Cramer type characters just shouting how
CNBC.
Like, yeah, bye, 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 bye.
Mm-hmm. Goodbye. Good. There are a lot of goodbyes out there. Goodbye house. Goodbye car. Goodbye wife. Goodbye life.
But
goodbye
I just
kids. Goodbye life again. Double goodbye life.
But I just can't imagine Americans rioting. When they are confronted with the truth, do you think they will riot, or do you think they'll just keep watching Fox News?
Well, there's that need to polarize the American society by feeding religious fervorism and fanaticism wherever it can be fed. And we saw that a very interesting story about Jesus Camp.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Jesus Camp, they've got kids going to camp to become Christian warriors, and they interviewed some mothers who have their kids at Jesus Camp, and they're saying, well, you know, people in Palestine and other places around the world are willing to, you know, fight to the death for their religion. So we think we need to train our kids to, you know, become religious warriors. So, well, America will revolt, but on one hand, you're going to have indoctrinated fundamentalists who are hoping to die and go to heaven, and you're going to have then secularists or the people who are more in tune with the founding principles of America who will be desperately trying to either fight their way fight for democracy or fight their way out of America. So what's that story say?
Film shows youth training to fight for Jesus, an evangelical worshiping camp, Jesus Camp, run by Pastor Becky Fisher. She says, the woman who runs this camp and trains these young Christian soldiers, she says, I want to see them as radically laying down their lives for the gospel as they are in Palestine, Pakistan, and all those different places. And then in this documentary, they do talk to like these 9-10-year-old kids. And one of these boys says, a lot of people die for God, and they're not afraid.
Right.
And they're worshiping and weeping and praying for salvation under a picture of President Bush, not Jesus. So they should call it Bush Camp instead of Jesus Camp.
Well, this is what the entrenched monopolists need, this army of fanaticized youth willing to kill in the name of Halliburton's prophets. You know, they've got over there in Iraq now, there's an interesting story that Kellogg Rootin Brown, a subsidiary of Halliburton, is over in Iraq, and they're taking American soldiers who are paid very, very low. Their job is to train these Kellogg Rootin Brown guys who are working for Halliburton, what they do, give them their jobs, train them in electronics and things like that. And then the Kellogg Rootin Brown guys are getting huge salaries. Very, very high salaries as consultants, as outsourced contractors in Iraq. And, of course, Halliburton is a multi-billion dollar company. The stock has quadrupled since the Iraq war. And, of course, it's Dick Cheney's company. And Of course, he still has stock options, and he's made hundreds of millions of dollars thanks to the invasion of Iraq. It's pure war profiteering. And so these guys in Iraq are literally killing themselves for Halliburton shareholders without any I'm not making a metaphor there. I mean, they're actually killing themselves for Halliburton shareholders. So these kids in America are going to Jesus Camp are killing themselves for McDonald's profits, for Starbucks profits, for Microsoft profits. They're willing to kill themselves for the profits of consumer products companies. And then you've got another portion of America who are slow to wake up to the fact that they've got fanaticism, religious fanaticism and fascism within their ranks. They'll be desperate to escape, but they're going to, those walls that they're putting up, we've said this all along, and I'm sure people will, this was another one we'll be prescient about, is that that wall between America and Mexico is not to keep Mexicans out, but to keep Americans from escaping, to keep Americans in. You know, there was another story we just saw yesterday about the, who sent us that story about the Halliburton detention camps?
Madge Weinstein.
Yeah, there's more and more of the information is coming out.
Civilian labor camps.
Civilian labor camps.
Yeah.
Now, these are people that will be, their parents, this baby boom generation, will have racked up, you know, hundreds of billions and trillions of dollars worth of debt. One in four people now who are in their 70s and 80s are going to die never having paid off their debt. And, you know, the law will come, I should assume, after this November stealing of the next round of elections, the next rigged elections. They'll pass a law in America to comply with Japanese law, that debt goes from generation to generation. This is why in Japan, you've got huge wave of youth committing suicide, and they've got online suicide packs. It's because there's a law that allows for the debt to transfer from generation to the next generation. So once they get that established in America, then you're going to have a whole generation now killing themselves. In Britain, they already have a huge self-harming industry going on. Self-harming is huge. They have something like over 100,000 cases, documented cases in the health service of kids self-harming and taking razors to themselves, cutting themselves. They're getting ready to kill themselves because as soon as they get this law passed to do the intergenerational debt transference, they're not going to – why would they continue living if it means taking on a 200,000-400,000-pound debt and then spending their life in a civilian labor camp for Halliburton to pay off their parents' debt that they used to squander on plasma screen TVs and to destroy the environment? No, they'll do the sensible thing, which is to kill themselves. So you've got suicide for consumerism. Then you've got suicide bombers, so-called suicide bombers.
Jesus camp people. And now the A-Team in New York.
The A-Team? With Face and the Mr. T?
Yeah.
Mr. T?
Well, he sent us a link to a story on Salon.com. Jack Bauer wants you. The CIA.
Jack Bauer wants me from 24? Where is he? Get him on the phone right now.
No. The CIA is infiltrating movie theaters with a snazzy new 24-style ad campaign. This month marks the CIA's first purely pop moment with a 30-second whiz-bang short in movie theaters that urges, quote, people of integrity and patriotism who have a taste for, quote, ambiguity to join the agency in making the world a safer place.
Is that actually the text?
That's the text.
A taste for ambiguity?
Yes.
In other words, it's a taste for lawlessness.
A taste for torture.
Well, you know. Get out now. Get out while you still can.
So obviously the Jesus camp people. Now those guys are never going to be smart enough to be CIA agents. Those are the suicide bombers, basically. You throw them into the army and just throw them over there as cannon fodder to fight whatever wars you need. The CIA, now they're appealing to people who might be liberal, who might be more sophisticated, to say, are you ambiguous? Why not come torture for us?
Yeah, or become a money manager, you know. The secret to managing money is to have your empathy taken out of your brain.
Exactly.
Using either drugs, alcohol, or various other means. And then you too can be a good money manager because it's been shown that slightly brain-damaged people make the best money managers because they have no empathy. Autistic people with no empathy make good money managers. So now, autistic, brain-damaged, drug-addled, societal rejects make good CIA agents because they endorse ambivalence. Ambivalence is America's value for truth, justice, and ambivalence. It's super equivocator man of mush for the American way. Ambivalence, lies, and deception. Duplicity and ambivalence are the keys to money management success.
Uh-huh.
You have to be able to juggle a lie, two pristine lies at the same time that cancel each other out until such time as they don't.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So here's a good story from today's New York Times. The New York Times says everyday low wages.
Mm-hmm.
So you can guess what that's about, right?
That's an ad, did you say, or an article?
Editorial.
Oh, okay.
Editorial, everyday low wages. You can guess what that's about, I'm sure.
Walmart.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So Richard Daley of Chicago, you know, he vetoed this plan to force Walmart to pay wages that would enable people to get off the government subsidy programs while they're working at Walmart.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the government pays for Walmart's health plan because Walmart doesn't pay their employees enough money to afford health care. So the government ends up paying for the health care.
Mm-hmm.
So effectively, the government pays for Walmart's dividend payment, more or less.
Yeah.
So
the government is the people. So you, the citizen shopping at Walmart, is paying for the health care of these workers.
Right, it's government subsidized. It's communism.
Uh-huh.
But Walmart is a communist state. You know, I mean, Milton Friedman, give me a call. You argue against this. It's undeniable that Walmart is a communist country.
Yeah,
they've got a huge workforce. They get state subsidies. They sell products that are manufactured to the detriment of society in ways that are not free market capitalism in any way, shape, or form. It's communism.
They have the forced labor camps in China.
Yeah. So there's and in China, at Walmart, they have unions. So figure that out. In communist China, they have unions. In capitalist America, Walmart does not have unions.
Well, you know, in Hungary, the people would be out rioting. But in America, I guess they just don't care.
Yeah, in Budapest, Hungary, they're like, oh, you lied for us morning, noon, and night about the economy. Now we're rioting our ass off.
Exactly.
The truth is that America lies through its teeth morning, noon, and night about, you know, I was reading this, you know, PK, Paul over there in PKJ, he sent me this article from, who's that Shimada in Washington with the bow tie?
Oh, yes, Will, George Will.
George Will, yeah. He's saying that Walmart, actually, talk about Walmart. He's saying Walmart... you know, as a force for good. Now, this is just a blatant lie. You know, he cites a couple of things. Like, for example, Walmart has increased productivity, and it's done as much to increase productivity in America as the Federal Reserve Bank. Now, this is an interesting statement because it elucidates George Will's either purposeful obfuscation of the facts or that he's lying outright.
Mm-hmm.
Or
ignorance.
He's just plain stupid.
Yeah.
That's a third choice. Third choice, you know, he's an ignoramus.
Mm-hmm.
Because the productivity number in America is output per hour per man. Output meaning GDP, and the number used most often for GDP is so-called inflation adjusted. Now, that's important because the inflation number is the what's called the core inflation number, which excludes energy and housing. So this is a number that is 200 to 300 basis points or 2 to 3% lower than the actual inflation that you, me, and everyone else out there experiences. You can't go to the grocery store and when they hand you your bill, when you get through the checkout counter, you can't say, oh, I'd like to be charged the core inflation rate, please, not the real inflation rate.
Mm-hmm.
They don't say, oh, okay, you're right, sir. Let's deduct 30% from your grocery bill. I'm sorry. I forgot to charge you the core inflation rate. So it's a purposeful lie that the government puts out because the government, if they were to state the truth about what the real inflation rate is, that means that all of the pension checks that they pay out every month would have to be adjusted accordingly. And that means that they'd have to dish out lots and lots of money to retirees who have earned that money. But government doesn't like to pay retirees their money, so they lie about the inflation number. They also lie about the inflation number so they can keep interest rates artificially low to make it very, very easy for banks like Goldman Sachs and these other big global banks to do these mergers and acquisitions and to refutilize the global economy, to re-surfifize, put people into serfdom positions in the global economy, to do the carry trade, borrow in Japan at 0%, invest in the West at 4%, you see? They have to keep interest rates low, which means talk about inflation as being low, even though it's not low by any stretch of the imagination. So George Will is saying productivity is high thanks to Walmart, which is a lie because inflation is higher than George Will is honestly saying it really is. Therefore, that productivity number is not 3%. It's not 2%. The productivity number is actually not even 1.5%. And then if you to add back the cost, which is another major lie, which George Will never talk about because he's got his head up his ass, is he never talks about the cost of the environment. Now, if you put the environmental cost back in the balance sheet, that productivity number drops to negative. It's negative productivity. It's negative GDP growth. You can't continuously do a dollar worth of GDP growth, which takes how many dollars now in debt creation to create dollar GDP growth?
$7.
$7 mm-hmm. of debt to create $1 of GDP growth. And George Will's talking about positive productivity numbers as they're expressed by Walmart, slave trader in China. Come on, George. Either you're stupid or you're just outright lying. And when the guys come with the pitchforks and the burning torches, you're going to be the first one in your bow tie. You're going to be number one on the list. So everyday low wages, according to the New York Times. It says the choice between no jobs and low-wage jobs is a false choice. Walmart and other mega retailers need market share. With suburban areas saturated, cities are the logical place for Walmart. You know, because they're out there in the countryside where people are, you know, stupid. Mm-hmm. So they're stupid enough to shop at Walmart and save 20 cents, even if it means losing 30 cents on their wages or losing their farm. You know, or losing their factory job. They're willing to shop at Walmart and lose their job to save 20 cents.
Mm-hmm. Well, they already have lost their jobs. They're just surviving on welfare checks.
Yeah, white people on welfare checks. The biggest recipient of welfare checks in America, white men.
Mm-hmm.
So these white men in stupidity-driven suburbs. And
it just made me realize that, like, how genuinely communist command and control. Like, all those Walmart shoppers are white men on welfare, so i.e. being supported by the government, shopping at Walmart, which is being subsidized by the government.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a giant, one of those giant Soviet markets where you used to go up and line up to pay for the bread and then go and line up and get your slice of bread.
Yeah, you line up for your government check and then you line up for a slice of bread. You line up for your bottle of vodka. Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, everyday low wages. I mean, this is about communism. That's what communism is about, everyday low wages. That's what it's about. That's what communism is.
And so, like, the Walton family, they're just basically civil servants from hell who are just taking a cut of everybody's unemployment and a welfare check.
The Walmart family, if you add them all up, it's the richest family in America. It's the richest family in the world.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Thanks to state subsidies from the government to the Walmart family. They did not make a nickel. They just took government money, took taxpayer money. That's it. All your tax money, wealth transference from hardworking taxpayers to the Walmart family via corrupt politicians, corrupt markets.
Yeah.
And in Budapest, they're rioting now.
Because as you can see, they wouldn't have spread so much around the world if it weren't for all of those state-subsidized white guys out in the middle of America. Because had they not had these people who were had a set paycheck from the government, they don't care about losing a job because they don't have one and they'll never get one. So now we see with Walmart trying to get into cities, the massive resistance, and they're unable to get in there and they're unable to compete. But had it not been for all those government subsidies of all those government subsidized people and all those government subsidized red states, they wouldn't have become such a powerful family.
No. So Walmart especially needs more U.S. consumers, having pulled the plug on attempts to expand in Germany and South Korea. Because in Germany and South Korea, they're a capitalist society.
And they have dignity.
And they have some self-worth and dignity.
Yeah.
They don't want Walmart plantations where people are working for slave labor and then shopping at the company store where they control prices and manipulate prices.
Mm-hmm.
Another argument. Walmart says Walmart that paying higher wages would compel the company to raise its prices, hurting low-income consumers.
Low-income, you mean government-subsidized white guys.
Well, the only reason they can offer lower prices now is because they've outsourced all their manufacturing to China, which has also taken all the American jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't fill in the whole coloring book here.
Well, so is Mexico, and I'm just laughing at all those government-subsidized white guys who sit on the border with guns trying to keep Mexicans from coming in. It's like, you know, they're really actually trying to keep their jobs from coming back. We already sent you our job, god damn it, and I'm living on government subsidized checks.
Well, you got a parallel government being created in Mexico.
Yeah.
Hundreds of thousands of people on the street.
Yeah.
You've got now thousands of people in Budapest rioting against being lied morning, noon, and night about the economy.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got pockets of resistance all over the world now because the IMF, the World Bank, Goldman Sachs, Federal Reserve Bank, all these bankers, Wall Streeters, the Citi, the Davos 5000 class, we call it, all these guys, it's being more and more people are waking up to the fact, as we've been saying in the last three and a half years, is that there's this mass wealth transference from the global economy, the global ecology, into the pockets of a few crooks. And, you know, the political alternatives are not great because they've corrupted that process with these Diebold voting machines.
Mm-hmm.
So I see today Diebold eyes the China market, talking about China.
Well, why? The government there, if there were elections, would win by 99%.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that China is all those local governments, those local campaigns on the local level. They still have dissent out there. They still have people who are protesting in the streets and getting screwed over badly in rural China. So they want to make sure that they can squash those people, I guess, with these Diebold vote rigging machines.
Well, so they're going to have to change the name. This is they're not going to sell them the American Miracle 51% model. They're going to sell them the Miracle 99% model.
Oh, but also remember, Diebold sells those automatic teller machines.
Uh-huh.
So there's a huge market in China. Also, China, they're going to introduce credit cards.
Mm, yeah.
So they want to get Chinese people strung out on the dope of credit card debt, bad elections, and ATMs.
Well, I'm not sure that credit card debt is going to be a problem there for a while, because don't they kill you, basically, if you get into debt? You know, they kill bankers there who steal $100,000. They get caught embezzling, and then they kill them, don't they?
What's this thing? It's called a cash recycling machine.
Cash recycling?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, what is a cash recycling machine?
I don't know, but that sounds like it's pretty nefarious.
ATMs that are made in Shanghai, it secured an order for 1,200 ATMs and recycling machines from China Construction Bank.
Oh, and recycling machines.
Uh-huh.
Recycling. Recycling plastic bottles.
Mm-hmm.
Tin cans.
The Diebold sells cash-in, cash-out recycling machines for every three cash-out ATMs in China, said company executives. The recycling machines are popular because cash is king in China's financial system.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so you could pay cash-in and pay cash-out. You could pay into your machine? Maybe that's what it is.
Maybe it exchanges used bills for new bills?
Well,
like,
I'm sure the
5,000 yuan, old crappy bills, give me new ones.
I'm sure the mayor of Biffin Bridge will know.
We got to find out about these cash recycling. So, everyday Walmart. So, Walmart's back in the news. So, they're starting to say here in the New York Times that, you know, you got George Will in Washington defending communism, and the New York Times is saying they're waking up to the fact that Walmart is this huge company store. And American labor forces are just becoming like, you know, huge slave labor forces. And it's huge government subsidies that go just to the Walmart family. And
that's
too bad for y'all. What else is going on here? Financial Times? What? Huh?
Can I bring up one story about this communism? Because one thing that communism always does and why it failed previously was because it creates the misallocation of resources. Well, in Britain, people are throwing away so much food,
yeah,
right? They're producing more food waste and chucking it out more carelessly, according to rat experts who are explaining the massive rise in giant rats in London, who are becoming bigger and bolder. And they're able to eat poison now. They can consume what we used to call a lethal dose, and it doesn't kill them.
Are you sure you're not talking about Goldman Sachs bankers?
these rats... pest control professionals caught a 2-foot-long rat in South London just recently.
Mm-hmm.
These rats are fighting the rioting against the garbage men.
Mm.
So these are resulting from, experts say, because of the warmer climate and because we're throwing away so much food.
Yeah, that's incredible. So you've got these big, fat, ugly rats roaming around London.
In the middle of the day. They're more and more just walking down the road in the middle of the day.
Well, it's a symptom of market failure, obviously, once again. You've got people who are starving in London, and the food gets hoarded by a few percentage points, a percentage of the population, who can't, even they're trying their darndest to become obese, and the obesity rates in the UK are zooming off the charts like they are in the US. You know, there are physical limits to how much food you can jam down your throat. So the cost of food is less than zero because all you're doing is raping the global arbitrage, wage arbitrage, and interest rate arbitrage. You're not really working for that money, so you're just throwing food down your throat. You're becoming an obese, fat, waddling Londoner pig, but you can't physically jam it so much down your throat. You're not, you know, so you end up throwing it into the gutter, into the street, into the alleyway, and it's giving rise to these huge rat populations.
Mm-hmm. And the other reason for this is that everything is being privatized, you know, so all these, the rubbish collection agencies, they're only collecting things every 2 weeks rather than weekly or daily. So they're saving money. They're collecting your garbage from out front of your house. So there's more and more garbage just lying around.
All right, because all the public services have been hollowed out with debt because the government gave it all to private contractors. Okay, so this fits in with the rise of the superbug in the hospitals because...
Yeah, it's like a superbug, super rat.
Yeah, they gave the hospitals to private contractors who loaded up, who stole all the equity and then loaded up with debt. Then they don't have enough money to hire cleaning staff. So now on the cleaning, the public services for... waste disposal, they gave it to private contractors, they steal all the equity, they load what's left up with debt, they don't have enough money to do the garbage collection anymore. So this is what happens when you give bankers your state financed assets. And you know, Sweden, of course, voted to go down this path now. The election in Sweden, they wanted the right now because they're envious of their drunk, rat infested friends in London.
Well, they're using that Swedish vote as a warning for Labour in Britain, because the fact is that this group that won the center right, the so-called center right, they're calling themselves the New Moderates, right? Their party was called the Moderates before, I guess.
Oh dear.
But they were like the Tories; they were right wing. But in order to win this election, they had to pretend to be like David Cameron and just pretend that they were going to maintain the social welfare system, that they weren't going to touch it at all, that this was the only viable way to run their society and economy.
Yeah.
But the other reason why lost, you know, the left wing side, was exactly because of what's happening in Britain, is that the Swedish prime minister was there for 12 years. People were sick of him. They were bored of him, and he refuses to leave. So they brought in the other party.
Right.
So how do you get rid of guys in our broken democracies that just don't leave?
Well, that's the thing. It's dictatorship is a more natural state of affairs.
It seems to be.
It takes a Herculean effort to institute democracy, and it's very rare. But it also is short-lived. As the founding fathers of the American democracy said, they doubted it would last more than 50 years.
Because, as you say, it takes a Herculean effort to maintain it as well, because you need to have a smart population. You need to have an educated, informed population. Mm-hmm. And that quickly descends into the lowest common denominator.
Well, selflessness triumphs over selfishness.
Mm-hmm.
And this is completely outside the norm of human genetic composition and bias.
Yeah.
It requires extraordinarily gifted leadership, of which there are very, very few people that can fill those shoes. So you end up reverting back to the natural state of things, which is
mayhem.
Violent patriarchy
mm-hmm.
of testosterone-laden psychopaths running around killing each other because they're all insecure about their little weenies.
Oh, it always comes down to that, doesn't it?
Pretty much. I mean, so speaking of little weenies,
mm-hmm.
Warren Buffett.
Oh, yeah.
Here in the New York Times Herald Tribune, he's talking about how his recent $4 billion investment in Israel is such a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
He bought Iskar Metalworking in July.
I see Warren Buffett's there in Israel right now for 2 days.
Yeah.
On a tour to see how many Lebanese and Gazans were killed to make way for his business investments.
Well, that's a good point. You know, the Pope is making stupid remarks about Islam.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's setting up a huge... I think, you remember the Danish boycott? of Danish Islam boycotted Danish goods.
Yeah.
And the export of Danish goods to Islam countries as a result of the boycott dropped 50%.
Yep.
The export of Danish goods overall for that period dropped 15%.
Mm-hmm.
So Islam is now understanding of the power of the boycott. Warren Buffett is the single largest shareholder of Coca-Cola. He's there in Israel antagonizing the Muslim world, antagonizing the Arab world, antagonizing Lebanese, antagonizing Palestinians. By thumbing his nose at the Arab world, by thumbing his nose at Muslims, by saying, yes, I sanction state-sanctioned genocide. I am here talking up Israel. I think genocide's good. Well, I think for a guy who owns companies like Coca-Cola and Dairy Queen and all these other consumer products, that's a very dangerous thing to do for his shareholders. If I were his shareholders, I would be quite upset that the guy running the show is out there poking at the eye of the Arab, Muslim, Islamic, billion-strong community and basically going, nah, 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 I can go to Israel. You don't mean jack shit. Wait. I think that's a very dangerous thing for this guy to do for his shareholders. Berkshire Hathaway.
Well, you know, I just realized this weird parallel between this Coca-Cola and the U.S. economy is the U.S. economy now takes $7 worth of debt in order to create $1 of GDP growth. You know, Coca-Cola takes 7 liters of water to turn into 1 liter of Coca-Cola.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what a lot of the genocide against or the murder of Lebanese and Palestinians is about, their water, accessing their water.
Right.
So, and this, you know, Israeli ambition to get this water from these people also coincides with Warren Buffett's needs for his own corporation, Coca-Cola.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And where's the water in that region? The Litani River.
Yeah.
And where's that located? In Lebanon.
Yeah.
And what did Israel say? We wanted to push to the Litani River
mm-hmm.
to make water, to make Coca-Cola for Warren Buffett, who's now there with a $4 billion investment, the biggest shareholder of Coca-Cola. So it's Coke versus Hezbollah.
Yeah.
If you're Arab and you drink Coke, you're a moron.
Mm-hmm.
Any questions?
No.
Anyone like to question that? You're stupid. If you drink Coke and you're letting this go down in your own backyard, your mama needs water to drink. Warren Buffett's stealing her water because you're drinking Coke. So you're dissing your mama. Well, we'll see how this all works out, how it all shakes out.
Speaking of
Afghanistan, they just opened a Coca-Cola bottling in Afghanistan, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
That's what this war is all about, war on terror. It's called the War for Coke.
Yeah.
Well, you know, keep drinking Coke, right? You're going to drink yourself onto the plantation, y'all.
Well, take a look around the world where Coca-Cola puts their bottling plants. Colombia, okay, which is basically a U.S. military training camp.
Mm-hmm.
Somalia,
mm.
Afghanistan,
mm.
Like complete war zones where people die. Uzbekistan, where people are boiled.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where there's no oversight at all.
That's right.
And so Coca-Cola uses this to thrive. They say, oh, it's a, you know, show me the proof. You go get some proof of our wrongdoings.
Yeah, in Somalia.
Yeah.
Ask the local government about it. Oh, yeah, they're all dead.
No, the prime minister survived that assassination attempt yesterday.
Oh, he's working for Coke now?
Yeah, no, they have an interim leader, you know. Did you see this yesterday?
No.
And they were gunned down. His whole party, his brother, they were trying to get him. And,
in Somalia?
Yeah.
Wow. The Coke's there. They've got those huge barges offshore that they pipe in the syrup.
Maybe this leader was trying to have some sort of corporate social responsibility because he had read David Cameron's speech and said, no, you guys are supposed to be responsible, not irresponsible. Well, you're destroying our local environment. And they were like, let's get rid of the proof.
See, the amazing thing about it is that the reason people in the activist community don't take the Coke boycott seriously, other than the Muslims,
mm-hmm.
is that, you know,
the Indians as well.
And the Indians, I guess. I mean, things are changing. But you say you only spend, what, $1.50 or $2 on a can of Coke.
Mm-hmm.
And people just in their mind, they think, well, what's $2? That can't possibly make a difference.
Mm.
Because, and activists love to go after the big target. They love to go after the sacred cows. They love to go into the World Trade Organization or the UN or some big meeting, confab, and stage a protest and rub shoulders with the world leaders about changing some legal framework. And they, you know, they like to see their pictures up there in the world stage as well. But unfortunately, that's been proven ineffective. The most effective thing you can do, and Gandhi showed this with his march to the sea to make salt, take something common that everyone takes for granted, and don't do that no more. Whether it's the bus boycott in Montgomery, the salt boycott in India, just put that Coke down. It's a $100 billion company. If it went out of business tomorrow, nobody would notice. The jobs, you'd get more jobs because you'd have 10 competitors spring up overnight. And you'd have better jobs, higher paying jobs, American jobs. It's more jobs. Oh, well, I think they won't be happy until there's a gunfight over there. So I got my bets made. Oh, boy. Let's see. Financial Times. Provocative words from a fallible pope.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wait. A fallible pope?
That's what it says.
That's heresy. The pope is supposed to be infallible, according to Catholic doctrine.
The lead editorial is that the pope is fallible.
Wow.
Oh, you know, as we said yesterday, they were burning the pope in effigy, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
What do they do every November 5th in the UK?
Exactly. You know, every November 5th in the UK, they burn a Catholic at the stake.
That's on Guy Fawkes Day.
Guy Fawkes, yeah. Yeah, so the fact that Drudge is like, oh my God, Muslims are burning the pope at the stake. It was like, dude, go to Britain every November 5th, okay?
Yeah. Burning the pope in effigy, yeah?
Yeah.
And your point is every November 5th.
The Brits have been doing that for hundreds of years.
Yeah. It's called Guy Fawkes Day. They have a national holiday about it. You're reading a little twit.
Oh, no. The Pope's being burnt in effigy.
So, yeah. So, anyway, the Pope's fallible, according to the Financial Times. I thought he was God's messenger on earth.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem to quite work out here. What are they going to say in Jesus Camp about this? The Financial Times is obviously a heretical publication. They say the Pope is fallible.
Well, that's what even the Catholics were shocked that the Pope would dare apologize, because he's not supposed to apologize because he's infallible.
Says here, Pope Benedict is not so unacquainted with power in the public arena that he does not know the difference between contributing disinterestedly to a philosophical inquiry and the possible impact of the words of the leader of more than a billion Roman Catholics. His lecture, in its totality, he claims, was an invitation to a frank and sincere interfaith dialogue. And then the Financial Times says, oh, really? Good God, Matt. You must be mad. He's barking mad.
So the Financial Times is not apologizing for him, as every other Western media really has been.
No, they're not. They're saying he made an incredible error, and it shows he's completely insensitive to his role as interfaith mediator.
Mm-hmm.
It is true the passage was a small portion of a long lecture, though less clear how it relates to his essential thesis about the de-Hellenization of Christianity. It is also true the Vatican lacks the public relations expertise to draw attention to what it regards as important in its message. They don't lack no public relations expertise. The whole thing is one big public relations operation. The Vatican is the goddamn tourist attraction putting out this Jesus crap.
No, you know what I know this is about? I just figured it out. The Vatican is the world's biggest private bank, right?
Yeah.
Only the Pope is a shareholder. Surely he would have looked at America and looked at how much that feudal class is just wiping up on the war on terror. He wanted to stoke this because he wanted to do the, you know, give all his buddies and the mafia.
Cardinals, I think he calls them.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, maybe they have these their own Casey and Titan and Halliburton and Bechdel. They want a slice of the action because the Pope historically has all been about cornering the market and laundering money.
Right.
And now they have competition from America on the torture side.
Right. Because America claims to be sending people to hell now.
Exactly.
And that's definitely bleeding into the Pope's turf.
And doing the torture stuff. We know that the Catholic Church thought that they had cornered the market on that.
During the Inquisition.
Yeah. And money laundering now goes through London, where it had previously always gone through the Pope's Vatican Church, whether it's mafia money or Nazi money.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're kind of left without a portfolio.
Oh, so the Pope was losing market share.
Yeah.
In the torture and money laundering business.
Exactly.
So he had to, so this is this was a direct, unambiguous attack against Muslims to stoke violence and fear to help his portfolio of defense contractors in the Vatican's own bank account. He's got shares of the Halliburton as well. I wonder how many shares the Vatican Bank owns of Halliburton. Is there an annual report about the Pope's stock holdings?
No, there is nobody to report to because he is the infallible Pope and he is the only shareholder of the Vatican Bank.
Well, we know they own stocks. So, yeah, I guess you're right. This is just a turf war, and he felt that he was losing out in this global torture racket, and he felt that only by antagonizing Muslims more was it possible for him to clean up to the extent that Halliburton's cleaning up. Well, let me figure that one out.
You know, and also if he can create an unstable world economy, you know, I guess that gives him a market for his Pope-mobile. Because we've been talking about moats and these private security firms. How much need will there be for a Pope-mobile?
Mm-hmm.
So he could start selling Pope-mobiles to hedge fund managers and Russian oligarchs in order to safely move through the rabbling crowds, the rioting crowds.
Right, right. Yeah, those Pope-mobiles could be a hot item this Christmas.
I think so.
For dictators. Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld and Condoleezza Rice all got to get one of them Pope-mobiles. So Neiman Marcus is probably going to have a whole section dedicated to Pope-mobiles for their Christmas catalog. I think that comes out in the next few weeks. So he's got to get hopping over there in the Vatican if he wants to move some of them Pope-mobiles this Christmas.
Well, you know, Pope John Paul made the first step when he did the deal with McDonald's. This guy, I think, is maybe going to go for more originality and, like, ownership of the copyright. We own the copyright on the Pope-mobile. Let's sell this.
You know what they got to do with the Pope-mobile? You know, in Los Angeles, they have the lights underneath the car.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like the carriage is glowing, like a glowing thing. I think that you gotta you know, what do they call it when you do all the modifications to the car?
When they jack up the car and they start bouncing around. And
yeah, they got to get that car bouncing thing with the hydraulics. That would be good for the Pope-mobile. What do they call that? They're not chop shopping. They're doing some kind of customization. I forget what the word is. So then finally, going back to the asymptotic curve of price going to zero in the entertainment field, thanks to the ubiquity of free electrons, you know, we're seeing the record industry being transformed by file swapping. And we're seeing the movie industry and TV industry being transformed by file swapping. The people in the industry choose to call it piracy, and they fail to see that there are now thousands and hundreds of thousands of people who are putting content online that they created freely, that they are now sharing freely. And this is cutting into the entertainment industry because there are only so many hours in the day. So if you spend 2, 3, 4 hours a day watching content that was created freely and shared freely and distributed freely, that means that's 4 hours a day you're not spending on paid for content. And it's like the hotel business. Once that hotel room goes unrented for a night, you can't go back in time and re-rent it. No, it's gone forever. Unless, of course, you're a magical banker at Goldman Sachs where you can travel through time to when stock prices were low.
Exactly.
And award yourself a stock option based on a low price and then travel back forward through time, cash out the option, and give yourself a $500,000 bonus because you're an alchemist, because you work for the Pope, and the Pope's in the danger business. Anyway, so on this whole, this is the global insurrection. Has its power, like Gandhi in the salt. The global insurrection against corporate occupation has its free digital content and its free distribution platforms like YouTube. Now, YouTube has cut a deal with Warner Music. Now, a couple of weeks ago, people were saying, you know, YouTube's just going to get bought out and then it's going to, you know, disappear as a force for good. And I said that I wasn't so sure about that because there are bigger forces at play here. So I think this underscores what we're talking about here. So Warner Music is going to distribute videos on YouTube, and they are going to have ads on the site, similar to Google, where you get free email with Google. You get all kinds of free services with Google, Google Earth, Google Analytics, Google this, Google that. And there are many, many ads on Google, and you may look at an ad. You may click on an ad. And Google makes quite a number of dollars doing that. It's a $60 billion company or so. And essentially what they're in the business of is distributing stuff for free. I remember when Google first came out, of course, it was at the tail end of the dot-com phenomenon where this whole business model of giving stuff away was dubious according to the strict economic economic models that had been in place for a couple hundred years. But they proved, of course, that you can do this. And YouTube is allowing people to create and distribute freely. So Warner's going to have ads. These ads will generate some commerce, and then the revenues will go to pay for the copyright.
But how genius is the next step in it? In that all those people who put music behind their own, like their cat jumping after a knitting ball or something like that, they use copyrighted music. Well, Warner's is no longer going to go after and sue those people and spend millions, hundreds of millions of dollars on lawyers to throw these people in Halliburton death camps. They're just going to charge the copyright via the ads.
Yeah.
So they're not going to stop people from doing that. And in fact, this is a way to incentivize creating more culture and participating more. So the more people participate with your song, the more money you collect.
Yeah, well, that's right. They said under the agreement, YouTube users will have full access to videos from Warner artists, such as Red Hot Chili Peppers and Madonna.
Mm-hmm.
They will be able to incorporate material from the videos into the clips that they create.
Mm-hmm.
So you put a clip on YouTube and you have a Madonna playing in the background. Fine.
Yeah.
So this is incredibly detrimental to the Hollywood monopoly. And people who think they're sitting on catalogs of copyrighted material that are going to throw off the same kind of revenues that they thought that these catalogs are going to throw off, I think, are not really getting with the program here.
No.
These catalogs of digital material, whether it's film, TV, or music, you know, people are not going to be paying $15 for a DVD or $15 for a download. When it's all said and done, the amount of revenue you're going to get on a movie is going to, that you have in your back catalog. Like, you know, you've got Gone with the Wind. I don't know who owns Gone with the Wind these days. But it was a steady moneymaker for years. You sell to a different territory every year. People still watch that movie. Or that movie, It's a Wonderful Life, every Christmas. Every station in America plays that movie 5 times. So, you know, these catalogs and back catalogs of this content is just not going to throw off the same revenue that it had been throwing off before. And you've got competition, and more importantly, you've got competition from people who are going to create their own music, create their own videos, and create their own software for free, distributed freely. So, this is what's going to hopefully put the cartels out of business, the intellectual property cartels out of business. It's totally in tune with what we saw in the 1960s. You know, people in America and people in France too, you know, Sarkozy, he says the problem with France is that the riots of 1968 still resonate in French society. And people like Clinton and Bush and these people even say that the 1960s were a period of moral largesse, or whatever you want to call it, lethargy, moral lethargy, that led to the political, you know, lethargy of today.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would argue the complete opposite. If it wasn't for the 1960s, we would already be much further down the road of fascism and communism in the U.S. and Britain. The 1960s were a stopgap against what Dwight Eisenhower called the industrial military complex. The ball was already well in motion in the 50s. If it wasn't for the 60s, we would have already been all sitting in Halliburton civilian prison camps right now. Thank God for the 60s. It put a bumper between it slowed the process down. Then, unfortunately, the corporations came and they turned the icons of the 60s into Britney Spears, you know, pure pop nonsense, Michael Jackson, Michael Bolton, Michael from Wham, whatever his name is.
George Michael.
George Michael. Anyone named Michael shouldn't be a pop star. I'll say that. It's no good. Name one good pop star named Michael.
We'll have to think of that. But, you know, the one difference now, between now and the 60s, was that the 60s ended because all the leaders were assassinated. And now it's really hard because all the leaders of the free software movement, the free digital domain. They're virtual.
They're on our leaders. It's called anarchy.
Exactly.
It's anarchistic. It's anarchism.
So these Hollywood copyright cartels and the music cartels, all those people did try to find somebody to kill.
Yeah, they did. And they're losing.
Yeah.
And the way to fight terrorism is with anarchy.
Mm-hmm.
And the terrorists are mostly concentrated in the United States and Britain.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the most concentration, Bush, Blair, and Bin Laden, these guys are three peas in a pod. Most of the terrorists, and by concretizing, if I can use this word I just made up.
Concretizing?
It's concretizing. Yeah, these people who are doing all this bad, bad corporate crap.
Uh-huh.
So I see on the clock on the wall that we're getting close to the end of the broadcast once again here on Tuesday. Today is Tuesday. This is the so YouTube. Yeah, we're going to keep tracking the lotus flower of creativity exploding on YouTube and in other digital environs as we see the cyber Jesus explode in hundreds of thousands and millions of ways across the panoply of the creative galaxy within our minds and souls and hearts. The new reality, which is all about YouTube. Yeah. Bye, y'all. See ya. Tomorrow, mañana.